You're listening to the Ministry Grow Show, brought to you by Reliant Creative, the creative agency for gospel-centered ministries. Find out more at reliantcreative.org.
Welcome to the Ministry Grow Show, a podcast dedicated to helping churches and ministries grow and make more effective impacts for the kingdom of God in an ever-changing digital world. Whether you're building and growing a gospel-centered ministry or leading a church, if you want insight into the strategies, struggles, challenges, and successes of other ministry leaders, you've come to the right place. Welcome back to the Ministry Growth Show. Today on the show, I'm going to be talking with Steve Woodworth. He's the founder and CEO of Masterworks and the author of Lost in Transition, Lessons from the Most Disastrous and Most Successful Ministry Successions. Steve, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you. Good to be here, Zach.
To get us started and just have give us some context for the conversation and specifically your book, can you tell us about Masterworks, maybe share your origin story with that and why do you guys exist and we'll transition from that into talking about the book.
Yeah, I spent my years straight out of college wanting to go into missions, actually, and going to Southern California to go to Fuller, only to discover that I couldn't afford to live there and pay the tuition, and floundered, you know, my first crisis of faith, relatively new Christian. And my pastor told me about World Vision down the street from Fuller, and I walked in the front door and filled out an application and got hired. And a few years later, I was in charge of all the U.S. marketing for World Vision, and spent 12 years there, traveled all over the world. And when I left, I decided I wanted to do something for the kingdom that would build on that experience. And I wanted to get involved with this, what at the time was just a startup agency working with Christian organizations. And I wanted to take what I learned at World Vision and help a lot of organizations, which I've been able to do for 31 years now.
Very cool. Man, that's got to be a lot of fun travel there for World Vision.
I think I had been to 25 or 30 countries by the time I left World Vision, and some of them several times, and had about 1 million miles flown at 36 years old when I left. got to see the problems in the world, you know, mostly. I mean, there were some conferences I went to of field directors, but mostly I was traveling to the poorest of the poor, which are in the hard places, you know, where there's civil war and things like that. So it was a rewarding experience, and didn't have kids. My wife was totally supportive. And so, and she came with me on a lot of those trips.
Very cool. And then as you've run Masterworks, what are some of the things that you ran into that kind of led to writing this book?
Well, I've watched so many ministry leadership successions. I couldn't count them, but I'd say it's, you know, it's well over 100, might even be a couple hundred. And through the years, I've said it just seems like there's so many that go poorly. It's very sad. And I would guess that it's about half go poorly. Mm-hmm. And I've run that number by many different people from different parts of the nonprofit world, the Christian nonprofit world, and they've agreed with me that about half are not good, not strong, not the right person sometimes. And I saw the damage that does. It drags the organization down. It hurts people. And I felt pain by that. And in recent years, one of my colleagues, we were in an airport, and he told me, you need to write a book. And when we got back to the office, he had one of our designers mock up a book cover, which we're not using, but I kept it on my desk for like 5 years, just thinking someday I might do that. And I decided this last year, the guy that came out of the National Christian Foundation and founded the Signatory, his name is Bill High. Yeah. He helped me walk through this thought process of the fact that there isn't a book like this out there, and there needs to be, and you've got to make it a priority. And here's how to get it done. He's co-authored books with David Green, the founder of Hobby Lobby. And so he told me how to do it and encouraged me that every year that I didn't do it, there's probably going to be some successions that go poorly that could have gone well if I had written the book. And that's what got me jazzed to go ahead and pour myself into it last year.
And then is most of the succession experience that you've witnessed in the parachurch space, or is this book relevant to successions that might take place within local church bodies as well?
My experience is in the parachurch ministry space. I did get involved with our own church, and I learned some lessons there that I could come back to, so I don't get off track. But the parachurch space, I found at one point in talking about the latest World Vision succession, which I felt was a model of, they did everything right when they transitioned from Rich Stearns to Edgar Sandoval, who's the president now of World Vision US. And Rich, I said, I think you guys did everything right. I think I'm going to write a whole chapter just on this as a model. And he said, if you're going to do that, you got to talk to my board chair and my succession committee chair and my successor, because they might all say it was a terrible process and Rich was a pain in the butt. And so I did talk to all those people, and the World Vision board chair told me, I want you to talk to my pastor, because his succession was equally as good as Rich's. And I think you might find that it's the same issues that make successions go well or poorly in the church. So I did talk to him. His name is David Ashcraft. He was the pastor of Lives Changed by Christ Church in Pennsylvania, very large church, over 15,000, I think it's 20,000. And he's now the CEO of the Global Leadership Network, very smart guy. And he convinced me in one interview that everything that I was saying about the parachurch world was the same in the church world. And he said, and I think we do it worse in the church. So he encouraged me to interview some pastors and broaden the focus of the book, which I did end up doing.
Are you familiar with a guy named Matt Davis and a ministry called Pastoral Transitions? It's they have a podcast actually that coincides and goes along with their ministry, but it might be another podcast that would be helpful for your book launch. But they're helping pastors on the pastoral church side in that transition, next step, what do we do now type phase. And then on the flip side, helping pastors who have gone through maybe poor successions or been hurt by the church, even in coming out of those pastoral positions, process that and navigate that and help them into the next stage. So really cool ministry, and might be a good connection for you guys, and especially as you launch this book, to get this on that podcast as well. One of the things that you discuss in the book is, and you've touched on this already, but there's both the disastrous and successful ministry successions. What common themes and patterns did you discover among some of the successful transitions, and how do they differ from those difficult or disastrous transitions?
Well, I started with four principles that I thought had caused the poor successions to derail and the good ones to go well. I started with four principles, and I added a fifth while I was doing this. And my process was to take what I thought I knew and bounce it off people in real life, real CEOs who had gone through successions or were in the process, and good and bad. And I deliberately went to some of the ones that I knew had gone very badly, because they talked to me about it. They were clients, you know, and we had a trusted relationship at the time. And so those, I didn't disclose the names of the organizations so as not to embarrass them, but the kinds of things that I saw, Zach, were like, no, the first principle was that boards really need a lot of help and they don't realize it. And we can come back and unpack any one of these if you want to in more detail. But this is the most important decision a board has to make: who's going to be the CEO. And a lot of times they feel like, because it's our most important responsibility, we need to get it right and we need to do it ourselves. And in reality, those boards, they might spend, in the case of a parachurch ministry, they might spend 5 or 8 days a year max thinking about the organization. And the senior staff thinks about it every day, even when they're not working. And where I've seen the successions go well, the senior staff is involved in choosing the successor. They're, even if a CEO has been successful and they're retiring due to age, they are usually involved in a really good succession, helping choose their own successor. And the very best ones think about it years ahead and try to hire their successor into a COO role or a VP role and groom them to be ready to succeed them when they're ready to retire. So the very best ones have multi-year overlap in responsibilities, and a friendship bond grows between the outgoing and the incoming. And then that helps a lot with another key factor, which is that the outgoing leader needs to be respected. Very often when the successions blow up, the disastrous ones, is because the outgoing CEO felt disrespected. And then they get into a mode of, I'm just going to get out of here. I'm going to take my ball and go home. And they have key relationships with donors. They go start a new church in the same town. I've seen that happen with parachurch ministries too, where leaders have felt disrespected and started a new ministry in the same field. And then donors have gone over, and the original ministry that they were in has a huge drop in income. So that is another key principle, is that making sure that this outgoing leader, it's at a very fragile time in their life, that they feel highly respected. And another thing is culture. The single greatest predictor of success is that there's a culture fit. And the best way to make sure there's a culture fit is to have that person already in the organization. So again, I come back to, inside transitions are almost always better than going outside, because you already have resolved the culture issue. Does this person fit our culture? If they've been around for a few years and been groomed to be the successor, then they've already absorbed the culture, and you know that they've got it down. Humility is another principle, the fourth principle that I have noticed, that there is oftentimes on the part of an outgoing leader a lack of humility, where they decide they want to hang on and they want to slow the process down, or the person that they had been advocating that they thought was ready isn't really ready, and or has some fatal flaw. And it's really just about the ego of the leader that suddenly feels like I'm plunging into the darkness. I don't know what I'm going to do with my life after this, and they don't want to leave. And likewise, I've also seen humility problems on the pride problems on the side of the incoming CEO, feeling like, I can't get rid of you fast enough. Get out of my way. I know what I want to change. It's a new day. It's not your time. It's my time. And that ends up causing a lot of problems and oftentimes leads to bad successions. And then the fifth principle that I added as I went along interviewing more than two dozen leaders is communication. That in good successions, there's really open, honest, short accounts kinds of communication. So, because misunderstandings are so easily building up within an environment of uncertainty. Like if a board feels like we got to do this behind the scenes and not keep the staff informed and not keep the existing CEO informed, there's all kinds of misunderstandings that bubble up. And if there's clear communication on everybody's part, even in my own succession that I'm working on right now, with my guy, I realize that it's in such an emotionally fragile situation that sometimes I feel like, why did they have that meeting without me? And don't they want to hear what I have to say about that? And so he and I have those conversations all the time. So we're really clear on what kinds of things I want to be involved in and what kind of things I don't. At the same time, I try to be humble and hold everything loosely and say, look, I'll tell you what I think. I'll tell you why I disagree with the decision you're making, but I will let you make the decision and I'll totally support it. No one will ever know that I disagree with you unless you tell them. Mm.
So you've got the board side, the culture fit, humility, great communication, Was there a fifth principle?
Yeah, respecting the outgoing leader.
Okay. And so with these successions that you saw that were successful, the level of success was usually determined by how many of these five principles were in place?
I would say that the level of success is determined by all five of these principles were in place.
Okay, so even if you have one.
Even one of them. Yeah. One of them can cause things to go badly. And the most common ones that cause successions to go badly are boards not including senior staff and making bad decisions as a result and disrespecting the existing CEO who doesn't know what's going on. I mean, I've literally had multiple CEOs tell me that their board chose their successor and they didn't even know they were looking for a successor. Mm-hmm. And they're suddenly sprung on them that your time's going to be done in 6 months. We found your successor. I'm not ready. You know that I've had multiple people tell me things like that. So boards do what I think are dumb things, not on purpose, not because they're dumb, but because they think that this is their responsibility and they take it so seriously that they don't realize what they don't know. And they don't reach out for help from the people around them. And in some cases, you know, an executive recruiter is a good idea. Some cases it's not needed, especially on an internal succession. But that's the one factor. And the other factor is that respect of the outgoing leader. If that outgoing leader is not respected, they take major donor relationships with them. They take you know, church members as a church, they can do all kinds of damage without even really trying. If there's an organization I supported for years and there was a transition to a much younger CEO, and I talked to the guy who's the older guy, a few years older than me, and I said, you know, I've really believed in this ministry because of you. You've had a personal impact on my life. I don't know the new guy. Why should I keep supporting him? Or you know, do you feel that I should? And he gave me about a 5-minute, really enthusiastic response about how this is absolutely God's man for the job. I'm absolutely convinced. We've been searching for years. Here's all the reasons why he's the right person. And I think you guys should keep supporting it. The best days of the ministry are still ahead. It would pain me if you and Tricia stopped supporting it. And we still kept supporting it because of that. All he would have had to say is something lukewarm, like, well, you know, you should pray about whether God wants you to continue or not. And I probably wouldn't have continued. Mm. So it's possible for a outgoing leader who feels disrespected to do a lot of damage without even really having to say anything
negative. Yeah. So in those circumstances where the board removed the leader without their even knowing, like, was there even... What did the relationships look like between those leaders that were getting removed and those board members? Was there a relationship at all? Was it just, it's just difficult to imagine that would happen where you'd assume that there is a strong relationship between the board and leadership team.
I can tell you that right off the top of my mind, I can think of two parachurch ministry leaders who had led their ministries for more than 20 years, and one church pastor who had started a church and he led it for more than 20 years and it grew to over 10,000 people. And in those three cases, the board either chose a successor without telling them because they felt like the person's getting to that age. There's an artificial construct in the American psyche that at 65, we should get serious about retiring. That artificial construct just comes from Social Security. It's not based on the typical health of a 65-year-old or the typical productivity of a 68-year-old. It's just purely based on this mental construct we've fixed in our heads because of Social Security. So boards start to feel around that age as a leader gets into their mid-60s, we need to get serious about looking for what's next. And they sometimes convey that to the leader and the leader feels hurt by that because they feel like I'm in my peak years right now and I don't feel like I'm done yet. Or in some cases, they don't want this leader to be hurt, so they don't tell them. And then they find somebody, and then now we got to face up to it and tell them. And in every case, the leader, as I talk to them years later, when I, in the interviews for, that I did with them for the book, talking to them years later, these men are all in their 70s, these three leaders. Again, decades of leadership successfully in their two organizations and one church. And they're still so hurt by it that they get, two of them got choked up telling me the story. They've forgiven the board. They've forgiven the past, but they're still hurt by it. They're still deeply hurt. They don't have anything to do with the ministry, which is a shame. They don't want to have anything to do with it. They can't handle the pain that they feel when they go to an event or something like that. And the church guy, he was just mad. He was pounding his hand on the table as he was telling the story, just how angry he was that the church board did that and didn't give him a long, off ramp on his own timeline or a mutually negotiated timeline.
Yeah, man, those sound like difficult situations. So it sounds like some of the situations that you talked, that you interviewed, the individuals that you interviewed came out of situations where the leader was approaching quote unquote retirement age. So as we talk about ministry successions, what's the best way to navigate or find balance between tradition and innovation? It seems like oftentimes these boards are making these decisions because we want to innovate, we want to try new things. Maybe the we're having a difficulty reaching a new audience or younger audience, and so we need some innovation in the ministry and our marketing efforts. How does your book address some of those challenges that leaders face in navigating that balance between tradition and innovation? And within the book, what are some of the things that you would offer up as advice for maintaining continuity while embracing that change?
Well, I strongly advise, for multiple reasons, and that this is one of them, that you look for your successor while you're still years away from being ready to move on. And you do it with the full knowledge of the board that I've seen people have a 8-year plan. One organization that I interviewed, they're still in process, but I interviewed the outgoing leader and the incoming leader. They've had a 10-year
wow.
plan. And in the case of a church that a lot, David Ashcraft's church, Life Changed by Christ, LCBC Church in Pennsylvania, they had, their plan included having this younger pastor get an advanced degree. I don't remember if it was his doctorate or I think it was a doctorate, but it might've been a master's of theology or something like that. But that's the kind of way that these people think who are really thinking well about it is let's get a candidate or multiple candidates and let's groom them over time. And in the case of one ministry that I talked to, they also had a spiritual discernment process that they went through where they went through a time of prayer and fasting. And actually more than one organization, the board had times of prayer and fasting to discern, are we on the right track and who is the right leader for the future. And then when you're doing that, the honest, humble, older leader realizes, I don't have the energy to take this to the next level. I've had my time. I'm a wise, sage that can help the incoming leader, but I'm not the one to take it to the next level. He or she's going to have to do that. And so they're very supportive. And I've seen multiple cases of this, multiple stories that I interviewed and that are clients or friends of mine that are taking that kind of attitude of the senior leader feeling like the future growth of this organization is going to come from this person. And I've got to groom them to where they have enough knowledge and of the history and the culture and the core values that they don't lose track of how we got here and what are the boundaries that we want to stay within, but they give them a lot of freedom to innovate. And that process then kind of naturally, he must increase, I must decrease, takes place over time. And I call it, in my own case, I call it open-handed leadership. I've been telling my successor, Brian Brown, for more than 3 years, if you see anything on my plate and you think you can handle it, just tell me and I'll give it to you and we'll see how it goes. And if you need my help, I'll get back involved in it. But he's gone much faster than I expected, where he's been able to take things and say, I think I can take that now and just kept taking pieces of the company and doing a great job and taking them to the next level beyond where I could do it. I don't have the same energy and idea generation kind of capability that I had 20 years ago.
Yeah, that's cool. Let's take a moment to hear from today's sponsor, but when we come back, I want to continue this discussion and get into some of the communication models and how communication plays a pivotal role in all of this. Are you looking to grow your ministry but don't have the money or marketing knowledge to make that happen? There's good news. Google offers an advertising grant to churches and ministries that is worth $10,000 per month. This means that if your ministry is a 501c3 nonprofit, you are eligible to receive $120,000 per year in free advertising dollars. This allows you to place ads at the top of Google search results pages and drive thousands of visitors to your ministry website every month. Our sponsor, Click Nonprofit, helps your ministry acquire this Google ad grant and manages your Google ads to ensure you get the most out of the grant. Schedule a free consultation at clicknonprofit.com to learn more about how this grant can help your specific ministry. Mention the Ministry Growth Show when you sign up to get 20% off your first 3 months of management. All right, welcome back to the Ministry Growth Show. We've been talking with Steve Woodworth of Masterworks and author of Lost in Transition. Steve, communication, we talked about how that's one of your five pivotal principles. Plays a pivotal role in any transition. How do you emphasize in the book the importance of effective communication in these ministry successions? And specifically, can we talk about communication strategies and what you found to be proven as most impactful?
Well, I wouldn't say there's a strategy as much as it's just the need to be very deliberate, constantly communicate. I'll give you an example from mine, but first I'll give you an example from my church. My pastor came to me when he was 63 and said that he wanted to ask me to chair the succession committee. I wasn't an elder at the time. I traveled too much to be on the board. And so he said he was wanting to put together a succession plan and have a committee to help him do that. And I said, I'm really surprised, Tom. He was still running marathons. I said, you know, you're in great shape. You're healthy. You're entering some of your best years. He'd had a vision for reaching out more to the community, which was being very successful. We had taken over a school system that a Christian organization was going to shut down, and the church took it over and it was thriving. And it was his vision that we can't let Christian education disappear from our county. And so I said, what's going on? Well, I'm 63. The board feels like I should get serious about deciding what I'm going to do, and we should be looking for who's going to be my successor. And I thought, I've seen this before, this artificial construct of 65, like, because you're getting close to 65, we need to be really serious about this. And so I had a theory, which I didn't tell him, but I said, if I do this, Tom, on the first meeting, can I have an executive session with the board without you in the room? And then we'll bring you back into the room. And he said, sure, no problem. So I sat down with the board and he left the room. And I said, who wants Tom to retire? And raise your hand. And nobody raised their hand. And I said, Now, don't be shy. I mean, if you guys are thinking that Tom needs to be serious about succession, then you must be thinking that he needs to retire, or maybe you're thinking he needs to go to part-time or whatever. But who feels like Tom needs to get really serious and have a chosen successor and a succession plan? And nobody raised their hand. And I said, do you guys know that Tom thinks you want him to get a succession plan in place, and you want him to retire, and he's already thinking about what he's going to do when he's going to retire? And they were like, no. I mean, they were all surprised. And that's literally, this took about 5 minutes. And then I asked Tom to come back in. I said, Tom, nobody wants you to retire. And he looked around the room, really? And he's, and everybody was like, yeah, no, we think you're great, you know? And so we didn't meet again. That was the end of the succession committee. It's now about 7 years later, and he is going to sort of semi-retire. He's chosen his successor about, you know, in the last year, and he's worked hard at it for about 2 years in trying to figure out who's the right person. Do we have him on staff already? What do I want to do? And so he's got a successor who's starting in a month, and he's going to step away for a sabbatical, and then he's going to come back and work part-time on the things that he really loves to do as a pastor. So that there's a situation in which somebody said something about his age, and he read into that, I need to get serious about retirement because they want me to, and they didn't talk. And it took me coming in to get everybody talking and saying what they really thought. And I had an idea that misunderstanding was very common and was probably happening there, just because this guy was at the peak of his effectiveness as a pastor and still in great health. And so that's one story. Give me a time out here. I had another story in mind. Okay. There's another story from my own personal experience, and that is my successor's name is Brian Brown. And about 5 years ago, I got serious about thinking he might be the right person. And so I pulled him out from reporting to somebody else to have him report directly to me so that I could mentor him myself. And he came from the business world. He ran a digital agency, and it wasn't associated with Christian nonprofits or churches or anything like that. So he was a much more hard-driving business guy, and he was having an impact on people that he was sort of like freaking them out, you know, by talking about people around here don't know how to work hard, and he'd say things like that. And we all thought he meant me, you know, and so I started having meetings with him where I just decided that he's never going to grow into this job if I'm not really open and honest with him. And I told him, Brian, I believe in a much more relational culture than what you're used to. You had to deliver your numbers every month or else you had to lay somebody off. He was in an agency owned by a big company in New York. And he was very appreciative. We started spending like half day to a whole day, a couple times a year, just talking about values and about the management style and the things that I thought were rough edges on him that he needed to work on. And he absorbed that. He was humble enough to take that in and to welcome that and to ask me to continue to call him out whenever he needed to. He had a tendency to be a verbal processor, so he would throw out ideas that would cause people to be very nervous about what is he thinking. And I told him, you can't really be a verbal processor with your whole team when you're a CEO. You can do it like with one person, but you can't just keep like seeming like you're changing your mind all the time and throwing out ideas because people can't process that much change that fast. And then fast forward to today. So that was years ago we started doing that. Fast forward to today. Recently, he did something where I thought he was going to violate a contract. I thought he was planning with our attorney. We were in a meeting with our attorney, and he was talking about what would happen if we didn't follow through on this contract. And I thought he was trying to get out of it. And that night I started getting upset. Like, I've never had a conversation like that before. I would never try to get out of a contract that we made in good faith and we don't have any valid reason legally, I might go approach the person relationally or the company and say, we don't feel this is really working. Is there a way we can renegotiate it? But I wouldn't go to the attorney saying, is there a way I can get out of this? And he was like, whoa. He said, first of all, you're right. I chose very poor language. I really wouldn't just violate the contract and say, so sue me. He said, but furthermore, think of how cool this is. Let's take the positive side of this conversation for a moment. You realize we're having this conversation less than 24 hours after I offended you with the direction that I was going. That's really good. Let's do that. Let's keep doing that. And then he said, but next time, if it's 10:30 at night and it's bugging you, then you call me. I don't care what time it is, because I don't want you to suffer through that kind of struggle that you were going through. I had trouble sleeping that night. I was that upset about it. So all these kinds of things are so important for communication, for boards to tell the staff what's going on, what they're thinking. We don't have any candidates yet, or we have a candidate, or introduce the candidate to the senior staff, let the senior staff help interview. In the very best situation I've seen, which was World Vision US from Rich Stearns to Edgar Sandoval, Rich offered to help write the job description, and he wanted to offer his help to interview the finalists for the job. And he had an internal candidate that he'd been grooming. The board let him. They did a draft of a job description, and he said it was all wrong, and he rewrote it, and they took his version and used that. And then they ultimately chose to hire the internal candidate, and that guy's doing great. It's World Vision had gone flat for a few years. Rich said it was time for a younger guy, and he's grown the organization by 50%, 30 to 50%. I forget what the exact numbers are right now, but in just a few years. And so there's another case where the clear and open communication and everybody know what everybody's really thinking led to health, and keeping people out of the loop or letting misunderstandings develop are what caused things to blow up.
Yeah. I mean, even taking it back to your first example and some of the disastrous examples you've talked about, it just seems like poor communication is so much of the root. If there was just a honest conversation about where we're at or where we want to go, and approaching each other in relationship, that some of these big disastrous successions could have been avoided. It doesn't sound like it's as often that it's a power struggle or a deep-rooted, like, conniving type behavior. It's just a lack of communication. Why do you think that, like, what is going on there that there's such a, is it fear of that what might be said in that communication? Like, I'm just having trouble understanding what's getting lost to your book title, like, that loss in transition is such a fitting title, because, man, it just a conversation could seem like it would solve so many of these problems.
Yeah. Well, I have a couple of thoughts that come to mind there. I had a consultant come in when I was at World Vision and spent time helping us reduce the overhead. And he said, I've never seen such fear in an organization before. This was a long time ago. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, people just don't talk to each other. And he said, I was just in a meeting where people were arguing about what the CEO wants. And I said, he's just down the hall. He's in the office today. I saw him. Why doesn't somebody walk down there and ask him? And everybody's like, oh, no. So a couple things, you know, they're in Christian organizations and churches, there's a hierarchical kind of mentality that I think is even stronger than it is in a secular for-profit company. There's also, as I unpacked with this consultant, like, why is this like this? Why is this in part of the culture? He said there's also what he called the religious factor, he was a Christian, but he said, because we all want to be good Christians, we are very careful about saying what we really think, lest we offend the other person. And worse yet, what if we got in an argument? What if one of us got mad? Then, if you make me mad, I might end up looking like a bad Christian. And so there's an avoidance. There's a tendency to push the conflicts under the table and try to hope they go away. And he said in the secular for-profit world, people argue a lot. And in World Vision, back in the 80s or early 90s, he said, I don't hear anybody arguing. I hear people hardly ever even saying, I disagree with you. And in order to come to the truth, there have to be a lot of disagreements. They have to be talked about openly. So it's hard. It's hard work to do that.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, let's take another moment to hear from today's sponsor, Brett. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion with Steve Woodworth. Hey, church leaders. Today's episode is sponsored by Kingdom Stories. When it comes to your digital marketing and content strategies, have you ever wondered how you can use the power of storytelling and testimony? Imagine the impact. Stories and testimonies that resonate, that move hearts and minds. Testimonies that prepare people to receive gospel truths. Here's the problem. You're busy doing ministry and you don't have time to worry about your content strategies. And you definitely don't have time to worry about one more program. You already have way too much on your plate. The consequences? You're not taking full advantage of digital. The content you do post gets ignored. You have no plan or strategy for your digital engagement. And ultimately, God doesn't get the glory he deserves because we're not testifying of his transformational and redemptive work. What would it look like if your people knew how to share their testimonies? Your monthly content strategies were filled with stories instead of self-promotional content, and your content was focused on your people and God's work in their lives. What if your content was actually engaging because it was story-driven? Kingdom Stories is more than just a service. It's a catalyst for transformative digital communication. Stories change lives. Stories are engaging. And everyone has a story. What has happened in my life can happen in your life too. Here's the best part. You don't have to do any of the heavy lifting. Kingdom Stories will handle everything from start to finish. If you want to learn more or get our free content strategy map that will outline the entire process, go to kingdomstories.us. We know how overwhelming and frustrating content strategies and digital marketing can be. So we've solved that problem for you. Stop creating aimless content. Let us help you tell the stories coming out of your ministry. Let stories and testimonies fuel your church's digital outreach. Welcome back to the Ministry Growth Show. We've been talking with Steve Woodworth of Masterworks and author of Lost in Transition. Steve, many leaders fear the prospect of succession. We've talked about that a little bit already. They view it as a potential threat to their legacy. How does your book address the emotional and psychological aspects of leaders navigating succession, both outgoing and incoming?
Well, I do try to give a biblical perspective on the fact that God sees across 100 generations. His plan spans, thousands of years. And in that time period, there can be great leaders like Moses or King David, but they're only here for a time. And in the span of history, they're here for a very, very short time. And all of us need to look at ourselves that way, as we're only stewards of what God has given us to do in our time. And we need to hold that lightly, because when God brings somebody else along that is anointed to take over from us for the next period of time, we don't want to be seen to be fighting against God's plan, And I think about that a lot myself. And it is also important, I think, to be open and honest that you're emotionally fragile when you're getting older and you aren't able to do a lot of the things you used to do. I'm not talking physically, but, just energy wise. One very wise person I hadn't encountered in years, and he was in his early 80s and we had a couple conversations around a company that he was helping his son start. And I said, you seem like the same guy that I was working with 30 years ago. And he said, I'm only good about like this for about 4 hours a day, Steve. And so that, there's a guy who had embraced his limitations and was still doing really cool things for the Lord, but he knew he was only good for about 4 hours a day. And you can't lead an organization with a 4 hour a day job. You know, I mean, not very many organizations could you be successful with only putting in 4 hours a day. So I think it's, again, that ties back to the whole concept of humility, understanding our limitations and being willing to accept that. And also, it takes a lot of humility to tell your successor that you make me nervous. You're coming on so fast and you're taking over things. This is my relationship with Brian, and we've had this conversation 10 times at least over the last 2 years. You're taking over so much so fast that I feel like what I thought was going to take maybe 5 years is going to take a year or a year and a half. And then one day you're going to come to me and say, I don't need you anymore and I can't afford you. And I'm going to feel like, wait a minute, this is my baby and I don't have anything else I want to do. I want to, you know, let's find something for me to do. And in that case, we've built a strong enough friendship through this kind of open communication and even the openness to be humble and tell him that this is scaring me and it's hard for me, that he's felt like I'm the kind of person he wants around for a long time. He said, when you're 80 years old and you can only put in 4 hours a day, I'll still want your advice. I'll still want your counsel. And I still believe you'll have a contribution to make in terms of helping with Christian CEOs who are younger and need a mentor. And that's within the boundaries of the kinds of things we do at Masterworks. Well, all of that, I think, is a result of keeping your life in good perspective with the Lord and accepting his plan for your life.
Yeah. What do you hope that readers will take away from Lost in Transition, and how do you envision your insights impacting the way that ministries approach leadership transitions in the future? I have a question for you. Are you familiar with, did you interview by chance a guy named Brian Fisher?
No.
He was the executive director of Human Coalition, one of the larger pregnancy crisis or pregnancy centers and organizations that fight for the unborn. And I think they're based out of Dallas, maybe. And one day his board removed him and no explanation. He still doesn't know why it happened. It caused all kinds of hurt. He started a new ministry in a completely different niche and sector now. But just out of nowhere, just removed him from leadership and he packed his things and walked out the door and not an explanation, not like still has no idea what happened and what caused that and what their decision was rooted in. The ministry was unbelievably successful and growing and they were innovative. They were, things were going really well. He was not at retirement age. I think he was maybe 50 at the time.
Wow.
So just wild, wild kind of situation. As his new ministry, Soil and Roots, is a client of ours. And so as I built a relationship with him and heard his story and just kind of walked alongside him serving his new ministry, he's shared tidbits of that painful season of their life. And it's just crazy.
Yeah.
You see it all the time. It's really sad.
Everybody that I talked to, like executive recruiters and others, you know, and said, what percentage of ministry leadership successions do you feel go well? It was 50%. And then we found some McKinsey research that in the secular world that they did an in-depth study and they concluded that 46% of CEO successions in the corporate world go well. So basically the same. the leaf blower guy is gone.
Same. It's the same as the divorce thing. It's the same inside and outside of the church.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. That's sad. Well, you know, all right. Let me ask you this last question. So, Steve, looking ahead, what do you hope that readers will take away from Lost in Transition? And how do you envision some of your insights impacting the way that ministries approach leadership transitions in the future?
I hope that all those that are involved in a succession will take these five principles to heart and will continue to refer back to them, because I think some start well and along the way somebody forgets the communication aspect, you know, or they don't check their humility and continue to think about, am I being humble enough? I talked to one pastor who said that on the first Sunday that his successor took over as senior pastor, that what I hope people will take away from the book is to keep these five principles front and center in their minds throughout the whole process of a succession, because they're, even if they start really well, they can forget something in the middle of the process. Mm. An ego can get bruised, or communication doesn't happen that on a tight enough schedule with real deliberate, seriousness about how important it is. And the board might get halfway through and think, now we got this, and not include the senior staff in the selection of the final candidates. And I just hope that people will realize that these are all fairly simple. There's nothing profound about any one of those principles. And I just hope that people will keep them in mind, and at least one or two successions will go well that otherwise wouldn't have gone well. And I feel like it was worth writing the book. And as I've said that to other people, everybody I've said it to pretty much say, well, I think this will affect more than one or two successions, but I'll feel like it was worthwhile if it affects one or two.
Steve, if people want to get a hold of you or learn more about the book, where can they find more information?
They can go to masterworks.agency/succession. They can get a hold of me through the website as well.
Awesome. I will add that to the show notes. Can I pray for you as we wrap up today?
Yes, please. Thanks, Zach.
Father, I just thank you for Steve coming on the show and sharing his insights and wisdom and expertise from years of watching and being a part of and researching successions. Lord, I pray that you would use this book to be a blessing to the ministry space, that leaders who are walking through or about to walk through or even have walked through successions, Lord, that they might take these insights to heart, and that it would just guide the process to have healthier transitions and more successful successions, Lord. We thank you so much for what you're doing to redeem humanity, that you've invited us into partnership in this work. And we love you so much. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Mm-hmm. Steve, thanks so much for being on the show.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Ministry Growth Show. If you enjoyed it, we'd appreciate it if you rate and or review us on the iTunes store. And make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode. If you have a story to share with other ministry directors and pastors, or know someone who would be an incredible guest on the Ministry Growth Show, let us know. We love connecting with ministry executives and sharing their wisdom and insight with our audience. Just send us an email at info@reliantcreative.org. And lastly, if you need help telling your ministry story, we would love to share how we can help in that process. Check out Reliant Creative at reliantcreative.org. See you next time.